Hey, it's Sunday, February 10th, and this is Beginner's Puck, the podcast for hockey fans both new and old. Hey, Erica.
Hey, Deb.
We have some special guests this week. So I'd like to say, I know, I'm so excited. So we'd like to welcome Hannah and Megan from the Ball and Sticks podcast.
Balls.
I said balls. Didn't I say balls?
Mm-mm.
I guess I'm all about the pucks these days. So Balls and Sticks podcast. Welcome, Meg and Hannah.
Thank you for having us.
Yes. We're
so excited because you guys have the podcast that I wish was around when I started looking for hockey podcasts. And I've said this before on Twitter, and I recommend you guys all the time because you were smart, you were knowledgeable, it's educational.
And you're funny. And
you're very funny, occasionally salty, which I really appreciate. You have a healthy appreciation for Dylan Strome, which thank God somebody does. It feels very inclusive. I feel like I'm part of a conversation. I don't get that feeling that conversation's moving so fast and it is using language and terms and things that make me feel like I'm listening to insider baseball. It feels really good. So I love your podcast, guys. I'm fangirling you here.
Thank you. That is so nice to hear. We're so happy that's exactly how we want people to feel when they listen to our podcast. So that's very nice to hear. I just want them to think I'm funny.
And you are very funny. So why don't you just give us a couple minutes? Why don't you describe your podcast to somebody? If you were meeting them on the street and say, I do this podcast, this is what it is, and like what your purpose was in creating this podcast.
Do you want me to start? Of course I want to start, because you know that I love our origin story. Meg and I had actually never met in real life or spoken words to each other before we started this podcast. We're both big fans of baseball and hockey, and we're trying to find a podcast that had female voices. And so one day we found one, and then we hated it. And so we started ours out of spite. And that's pretty much the whole story, is we found a podcast we thought we liked, and it ended up not being what we thought. And so we were like, you know what? Screw this. Let's do it ourselves.
Which is, I mean, not surprising that we couldn't find a podcast that was exactly the kind of podcast that we wanted to hear. And We just texted each other like constantly about hockey and baseball. So we cover baseball during baseball season, but now that it's baseball off season, we're mostly hockey all the time. And we're like, you know, if we're half as funny as we think we are and entertaining, we could probably make a decent podcast. And so we started one. We wanted a podcast where, you know, we could talk about our fandom. We both have teams that we root for, but we have lots of other like side teams that we like, and players on other teams. So we talk about the whole league. And I mean, we like to cover news and we cover silly stuff and serious stuff. And we're both pretty into stats. So that comes into our conversations a lot. But yeah, we just wanted to hear female voices who were talking about hockey in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, yeah. I think it would be interesting to do a poll to see, especially women podcasters, like how many women podcasters started their podcast just like out of spite. Because I think that number would probably be pretty high.
Yeah, and there's plenty of other, like, there's plenty of podcasts that I like and listen to, but we just wanted to create the exact podcast that we wanted to hear and that we wished was out there.
Mm-hmm. That is the best reason to start a podcast.
Yeah, and I think we both found that a lot of the female podcasts we had found at the time didn't focus on the sport side of hockey, which is fine. Like, you don't have to talk about hockey in, like, a on ice statistics sense, but we wanted something that covered both the personal side of the sport and the analytic side of the sport. And again, spiteful and just a spite demon. So we did it.
Yeah. I think that's probably why we like started ours as well, because I know as a newer fan coming in, everything seemed so over my head, and like trying to listen to hockey podcasts. And again, there's podcasts that were incomprehensible to me in the beginning. Like now I listen to it, I'm like, yeah, I get it. But the podcasters that took the time to kind of slow the conversation down a little bit and say, and explain things. And I always say Jeff Merrick is very good at this, because he will interject things into a conversation that's a little bit more explanatory as people are going a mile a minute trying to explain a bit of history or a bit of topics. And I'm like, that's what I want. I wish there was that out there when I first started listening. And you know, it didn't exist. So let's start a podcast. And Erica was like, yes, let's do that thing.
Yeah. Also, it was just an excuse to get together with Deb regularly to talk about hockey, which is a thing that I love. That.
There yeah. is that. Let's be real. Like when there's
this
nobody...
is what happens when you move 1,500 miles away from home to Edmonton, Alberta, and it takes you a while to develop in real life friends. You glum onto your Skype friends even harder.
Yeah, there you go. All right. So you do talk about a lot of general things. You do, like, I know you each have your own teams, but I do appreciate that you will frequently roll around the league and touch on a lot of different things. And so in that general broad sense, what teams have surprised you the most this year? Because I know at the beginning of the year, everybody throws their predictions out. You look at those stat sheets, you look at the players, you look at the components, you look at the mix, and you're thinking, okay, this is the team, I'm looking at you, Philadelphia Flyers, that are going to make a run for it. They have all the pieces. And hockey is a fickle, fickle thing. And so much of it depends on, I don't know, I hate to say puck luck because it sounds so superstitious, but there's a lot of components that go into winning a game that don't necessarily have to do with the skill on the paper. So given that, what teams have surprised you the most this year, either good or bad?
For me, it's really been Montreal, because there were other teams I know that we can mention. There's one really easy answer that I think a lot of people would say, but at the beginning of the season, it wasn't that people thought that Montreal would be awful. It was just that their roster was very kind of blah looking, mm-hmm. right? Like even now, even though they're playing so well, they don't really have like a big star. I mean, I guess besides Max Domi and Carey Price, but they're just somehow have come together really well. And they're a good team. They're a team that's getting good results, and they're kind of, if you look deeper at their baseline analytics, they're really good. And I think they're going to be a scary playoff team, especially if Carey Price gets hot, which we all know that he's capable of doing.
Carey Price is always hot.
That's true. But
sorry.
You're going Erica's goalie crush. That's her goalie crush.
It's true. That's a good one.
One of them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, right. For me, I think the biggest surprise in a bad way to start the season was the Blues. Because everyone looked at their roster and was like, this team's making the playoffs. They added Ryan O'Reilly. They got rid of Vladimir Sobotka. Everyone should want to get rid of Vladimir Sobotka. And then they just didn't. And they were terrible. And now they're finally like coming around, which is exciting for me, a Sabres fan who has their first round pick if it's not in the top 10. So that was a fun surprise. But that turnaround. But I'd say the Flames have also been surprising. Not that anyone expected them to be bad, but I don't think anyone expected them to be as dominant as they are, except me, mm-hmm. of course. I knew from the very start that they were going to be so good, and I'm not trolling anybody.
I was going to say, was that a realistic prediction, or was that like a little bit of a trolling prediction that you had at the beginning of the season?
It was 100% a troll take.
She's adopted as a real take.
Yeah, I want that on the record that it was a troll take.
It was a troll take, except it ended up looking pretty good at this point. So I'm latching on to it.
Might as well.
Yeah, that's the one that makes Eric a little sad. Being in Alberta, just doesn't bounce her way a lot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't have the deep seated, like bone deep hatred of Calgary that my spouse does, or that many, many people around me do. But yeah, I don't necessarily want great things for that team, and right now they're ripping it up.
That is one of my favorite rivalries in hockey, though. Like, if the Battle of mm-hmm. Alberta is on, I am watching it, and it's just so fun. Mm-hmm. And this year in particular, it has like revived itself because they're actually decent. The Flames.
Yep. Mm-hmm. The nice thing is, though, I have to say, as much as I root against the Flames often, their fans are awesome. Like, Flames fans are just, for the most part, like, not obviously not everybody. Every fan base has its dark corners, but every time I've been to a Battle of Alberta game, either here or there, it's for the most part, it's like a friendly, angry rivalry. So it's been good hearted and like jocular. Whereas if the Canucks come to town, fights break out in the stand and people get ejected.
Yeah, because the fights in the stands I am used to as a Sabres fan whose arena is often invaded by Leafs fans. So
yeah. I can imagine it's a little testy. Yeah,
it's fine.
The Battle of Alberta, seeing a Battle of Alberta game in person at the Saddle Dome was, I think, that pretty much rivals seeing Vegas in Vegas in their inaugural year, as far as the energy in the stands and just it was
that was quite raucous. A game too that you happened to see.
It was raucous. It was a great hockey experience. And the Saddle Dome is just like this charming dump of an arena.
I love it so much. It is like a playhouse version of a modern hockey rink, and I adore it. And I'm going to be very, very sad when Calgary finally gets a new rink.
Oh, all right. So if those are the teams that have surprised you, like what are the teams that are breaking your hearts this year?
Everyone knows
Hannah,
mine.
Why don't you start?
Well, the Sabres did just finally win, so we have back-to-back points, which is a Christmas miracle. But they
were so good at the beginning of
the
year.
They weren't, though.
It was like, it was so exciting. But it was after last year, though, like any bit of a run was just, you just went to shake your pom-poms. Like, you can do it. You guys can do this.
It was so fun to be a part of that. But Meg can attest to the fact that during that streak, I was just like, they're not actually good. Like, they're winning,
but they're
not.
She never let herself enjoy it.
No. I have this problem where I don't know what it's like to be a fan of a team, at least a hockey team, that is good. Because I moved to Buffalo for college in 2011 and adopted the Sabres as my team. And they were terrible. And they were terrible for my entire time there, and then every year since then. And so having a team that was actually north of 500 was a really weird feeling, and I didn't know how to deal with it.
And so you didn't trust your emotions?
No. Well, and I didn't trust the analytics. Their underlying stats were pretty terrible that entire run. So I was looking at them, and I was like, you're not actually good. You're having good goaltending, and you're getting lucky bounces. And then the goaltending wasn't as good, and the bounces weren't as lucky, and everything was a disaster, and it still is. So that's fine. We have Rasmus Dahlin, and I love him.
he's amazing. No, what about Jeff Skinner? Do you think they're going to hang on to him?
I sure hope so, because I also love him.
Mm-hmm. He is like
what is the cap situation? I admittedly do not know much about it.
The cap situation is actually pretty solid because Patrick Berglund quit, and right. I'm glad that he quit for his mental health, and I'm very happy for him, and I'm glad that all that happened, but also I'm glad we have $3 million extra dollars. So the cap situation's not terrible thanks to that. They could probably extend Skinner at like 8.5 or 9 without it like completely screwing them over, and I hope they do, because put him on Jack Eichel's wing and magic seems to happen. I've also decided that I don't know about your guys' feelings about Team North America, but I'm wearing my Jack Eichel Team North America jersey right now. It's officially lucky because they won. So
my lock screen on my phone is Shane Gostisbehere and his Team North America, like with that amazing flex stick, that one shot that came out of that. And it was just like, oh, that is the team of my heart, guys. It is the team of my heart.
That was Deb's first hockey.
It really was.
That's a good first hockey.
Yeah. So like when I really became super interested in hockey, it was like, it was right before the trade deadline. It was the Austin Matthews year. And so like everything that I got really passionate about in the beginning was all of the backroom stuff. It was all the trades. It was, you know, that was the year the Stamkos was signed. It was the Shea Weber, PK Subban trade. So there was like so much drama happening that summer. But the actual first time I sat down and like really watched a game with what I would consider myself fan eyes, it was the World Cup of Hockey, and it was Team North America, and they were just so much fun. And that's why I feel like a very generalist fan, because then all those little hockey boys like went off to their teams, and I just feel like I feel like a frat mom, like a frat house mom, where all my boys are elsewhere, and I just like kind of keep an eye on them and see who's behaving and see, you know, who needs to be rescued and who should be in a better situation. So, yeah, I'm very fond of, even though, you know, I live in Philadelphia, you cannot not be a Flyers fan. Like, you just can't. But, and now that we have Gritty, you know, and Carter Hart, it's really hard not to adore this team.
That's quite a 1-2 punch right there.
It is. But all those, yeah, I mean, just watching those boys play and how much fun that they were having and just how fast they were. Oh,
it's still. Truly, it was like, that was so fun to watch. And that is why I love hockey, right? Is like that speed and that skill, which is another reason that I love hockey now, because it's trending younger and faster and more skilled. So if we could just continue that trend.
Yeah. And then you still have like really old and slow players. I mean, what was the big scandal? Not scandal. I shouldn't say that. It wasn't a scandal. Like Dion Phaneuf being healthy scratched, like for the first time in his entire career. It's like that game. They're not playing that game anymore. You know, like 5 years ago, like you couldn't imagine a player like that being benched. And now.
Yep. Well, and it's weird, too, because it's almost like the trend started in the East and it's slowly rolling to the West. Like if you look at teams like Chicago and LA and Anaheim, those teams are all still kind of slower and heavier, and they are all in the Western Conference. And maybe I'm ignoring any Eastern Conference teams that play like that because I don't want to see them.
It's not fitting your narrative. All right, Meg, so what team is breaking your heart?
I mean, if you look at teams that we thought would be competitive at the beginning of the season, I mean, I have to echo, like, St. Louis was a disappointment. I my husband is a Blues fan, so I'm a Blues fan by marriage, so I like to keep up with them. So that was disappointing that they really got off to such a slow start. And, of course, they made that coaching change. And I really think it just took a long time for the new systems to get put into place. Because for a while, after their coaching change, before they started getting good, their analytics started looking pretty good. And I was kind of, you know, watching, hoping that the results would turn around. And it seems like they finally have. They're sitting in a playoff spot now, although precarious, in the Wild West, where everyone is mediocre and everyone has a chance.
Yeah.
I hate the turtle race.
You said mediocre. That's very generous. That's not the word that I use.
Yeah. There's just so many teams who are clustered. And yeah, it's going to be very interesting. But I was also disappointed in the Flyers, actually, because I like a lot of the Flyers players. And so that was also disappointing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Although
as
we speak right now, we're recording on Saturday, they just shelled the Ducks, which makes me very happy.
That's a really low bar, though. I mean, let's face it.
The Ducks are tanking.
I'm surprised they lost to LA. I mean, they were playing really poorly, but, you know, those are two games that should happen. That, I guess that means Carter Hart is finally tied for the most wins. I think that was the stat that the NHL trotted out about most wins in a row before the age of 21, I think it was. You know the NHL. I love their stats. It's like he's the third player with red hair from Prince Edward Island with a mother named Mary who has scored 3 goals.
They just want something new and exciting, and the league's been around for so long that it's hard to have that.
Yeah. I mean, literally probably every single game there is something happening in that game that has never happened before, just because that's how the world works. It's the fact that the NHL like picks that thing out, and it makes me giggle every time.
But like, wouldn't you want to be like that person? Like, that is your job, like the obscure facts administration. What can you roll out for the Chiron?
What I think is so exciting about Carter Hart is that he has kind of thrown a wrench in Elias Pettersson running away with the Calder, because he has placed the Flyers on his small childlike back and is carrying them. And it's so fun. And like, it's just wonderful, because I live for drama. And I was annoyed that Rasmus Dahlin wasn't going to be the runaway Calder. And so now I'm glad that there's somebody fighting for it.
Do you really think he's challenging him?
I think that if the Flyers come close to the playoffs, it is going to be a real contest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think if the Flyers make the playoffs, I think it'll definitely be a contest. If it doesn't, I don't know, because and then again,
hey,
you know,
Connor McDavid didn't win the Calder. So ever since then, I'm like, whatever, Calder. I can never even remember the name of the 26-year-old who won.
That's my favorite NHL trivia question of all time. Yeah, who won the Calder in 2016? Artemi Panarin. Yeah, you gotta memorize that one. That's bar trivia in like 5 years.
It's the best trivia. It's also, it kind of sucks for what's his face in Dallas, Miro Heiskanen, because he's kind of just been bumped from the Calder conversation entirely at this point. Because you've got Pettersson, you've got Dahlin, and now you have Hart. And those three are both doing magic things at different places on the ice, and there's no room for another person.
Yeah, it is sad. And part of me is like, yes, I think he definitely deserves this. The other part of me is like, oh, you're kind of coming in kind of late, and these players that have been there a long time. I mean, the fairness of my heart is like, is this really your year? But I don't know. We'll see if he continues playing like he's playing. He is so composed for such a young kid. I mean, I know he's had a goalie coach since he was 10, and I know he sees the same sports psychologist as Braden Holtby. I think they actually have the same coach as well, goalie coach. I mean, this is a kid who's been groomed for what he is doing now.
He's very technically sound.
He grew up in
Sherwood Park. That's a hockey city. Well, that's a hockey suburb.
Well, and he trains with Cam Ward in the summer too. Like, he's been around NHL players his entire, you know, kind of hockey career, even when he was 10. So it's right. If he weren't as composed as he is, I'd be maybe worried.
Yeah, true. And part of me is like, he definitely deserves it. The other part of me, I love those stories of like kind of the kids that come out of nowhere that you don't expect. Like, everybody knew he was going to be good. It's not a surprise. I think everybody was surprised that he is as good as he is now without a little bit more of a stint in the AHL, mostly because everybody was afraid that Philadelphia was going to break them because we're not good with our goalies.
You don't say.
What?
Yeah.
Well, and it goes against the conventional. I mean, goalies are voodoo. Completely, really, yep. But in all ways. But the conventional wisdom, you know, for a long time has been that goalies need more seasoning than other players. Yes. They tend to need more time in the AHL. But he really kind of has booted that theory.
Mm-hmm. I think he has.
But is he the exception or is he the rule? Because I think he's
exception. Oh, I'm not saying he's the rule. I'm just saying he's a test case that was different. Yeah. The plural of anecdote is not data. So
I love that. All right. So Erica, do I need to ask you what team is breaking your heart?
No, I think that's obvious. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Although, it's a roller coaster. And as a young person, I really enjoyed roller coasters. So I'm trying to hang on to that feeling that, yeah, the ups and downs that make you want to throw up sometimes, that's a good thing. That's totally a good thing, because I have to say, watching the last Oilers game was the most fun that I have had watching hockey in a really long time. I mean, they were just clicking and everybody looked good, and Nuge is now within 5 points of hitting his career record for most points in a season. And there's like 30 games left. So there's a knock on wood, good chance that he will pass that, and just everything just looks great. And then, you know, I have felt that way multiple other times during this year. Like, finally they've got it together, and then the next game they lose like 7-2 or something. So
that is the kind of optimism that I really appreciate, genuinely.
Yeah, so I'm so excited to watch the weird 5 p.m. game that's coming up this afternoon. And I'm really excited, and I also want to puke. So that's
I feel like you just completely summed up my feelings about the Sabres. So
that's hockey. I don't think you can really, I don't think you can get a better description of hockey than that. And I love like hockey chaos. I love it, love it, love it. It's not as much fun when it's your team that everybody's pointing at and saying this is like hockey chaos, because you've had a lot of chaos up in Edmonton.
Oh, so. Yeah. I mean, nobody is wrong for pointing at Edmonton and saying chaos. Like, yeah.
But it's not nearly as much fun to sit back and chew the popcorn while it's your team that's burning to the ground.
And it's like, I love my good, sweet hockey boys. And like, you know, some of it falls on their shoulders for sure. But so much of it
but
is
a lot of it
their
doesn't.
Fault. Yeah. So it's just like, okay, finally we've made some moves in terms of the management that I hope will end up
that's
being good
generous.
Things. But that takes a while to sort of filter down to player level. So, and then for a moment, I thought during the last game, I thought Ken Hitchcock was going to be out because he got hit in the ear with a puck and had to go get stitches during the game. That was scary. I was like, no, not another one. But he came back and he was fine after a few stitches. So I was like, all right, well, at least we can have some continued continuity with a coach, even though he hasn't been like 100% winning at all.
But no, you definitely have my sympathy, as anyone's probably heard on the podcast. There's not many quicker ways to get me like riled up and annoyed by thinking about how the Edmonton management is wasting away Connor McDavid's prime, which should be a crime. But
Yes.
Anyway,
should be like,
I hope they get it together.
Punishable.
I do too.
And I think, you know, a lot of, and this would be really interesting analytically to look at the change, how quickly a change in management and or coaching can affect a team. Because a lot of times it will be a quick uptick in improvement, yep, just because there's been a big change in the locker room.
Yeah,
players are like, wait a second, we don't know what's going to happen. And then, you know, things kind of settle down. Like, what, at what point do the new systems and everything take place? And I was thinking about this because the Dallas Stars did their first ever mom's trip. And I'm thinking, I wonder if management like came in and did a meet and greet with the moms. And I wonder what like Mrs. Ben and Mrs. Sagan had to say after, you know, the harsh words that were said about their children.
And
it made me. That might have been awkward.
Awkward conversation. But I'm so pro mom's trip. I'm so happy that those are catching on and more teams are doing them. That's amazing. Like, all the dads get all the attention for so many years, but we know that the moms were the ones doing all the work. Let's be real.
They were carpooling. Let's face it. They were the ones up at 5 o'clock.
They were the ones
the
driving all the kids to all the practices. Like, yes, more mom's trips, please.
Mm-hmm. Yes, agree. 100%. As a sports mom, even though it's volleyball, it's not hockey.
Oh, that's like, somehow worse. Because my mom had to deal with the volleyball momming and the basketball momming. So,
yeah,
it's terrible.
We're at tournaments almost every weekend in the winter. So, and I know, and they're far away, and you drive, and you sit a lot in camp chairs.
And you eat a lot of like hot dogs and popcorn, and you feel terrible after. Oh, it's so fun.
So, yes, pro mom's trips. All right. So I'm going to skip over the trade deadline stuff for now because I want to talk about women in hockey in general, because I think we had some fun Twitter conversations recently about the drama surrounding the All-Star game, as we don't need to rehash that because everybody knows. I know they know our opinions. We've talked about it. I know you guys have talked about it on your podcast. And then we had Pierre McGuire, who, thank you so much. I appreciate that sentiment. When Kendall Coyne was given her opportunity to broadcast during Wednesday Night Hockey, Pierre jokingly made an ass out of himself, and the optics of that were pretty darn terrible. And then and all this is kind of tied up in the drama that's happening between the NWHL and the CWHL, and this idea of the one league that we keep coming back to, and the players wanting the one league, but the financial ramifications of that, and how and if and when does the NHL become involved, and would that be a good thing or a bad thing? So there's so much to talk about right now. And I know I said on our podcast, like, I was never a proponent of like women being a part of the NHL or being able to play in the NHL or any of that kind of thing. I'm very happy with women having a women's league until somebody steps up and says, you can't. And as soon as somebody says you can't, like, my back goes up and I'm just like, well, let's talk about that. Let's have that conversation, because there's issues of parity in resources. There's issues in parity of life experiences between what an NHL player has and what an NWHL or a CWHL player has. So I guess I just want to have a real general conversation with you guys about, do you think having women's hockey tied up into an umbrella organization with the NHL would be a good thing or would not be a good thing? And how we sort of envision a league looking like that. Because the NHL has not done a great job in even having the women doing the demos at the All-Star game. I mean, they're not given, they're there, but they're not necessarily given sort of the spotlight that they have earned or deserved. So I think it's giving a lot of people a little bit of pause. So Meg, I'm going to start with you and just like, where do you fall in this conversation of women involved in hockey?
Yeah, I mean, my first disclaimer is there are many, 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 many more people more qualified to speak about this than I am, who know a lot more about women's hockey. But just kind of the two, you know, opposite sides of the coin that I have seen are, on the one hand, you know, NHL involvement means money and resources, which, you know, women's hockey desperately needs, and that would be a good thing. But on the other hand, like, do we want the NHL actually involved in running women's hockey when there's not a lot of proof that they could do that well? But I think a path that shows that it's been working for more teams is to just have deeper and more sustained partnerships with individual teams. Like, of course, you know, the same people that own the Sabres own the Buffalo Buttes, and there's other teams that have more casual partnerships. Like, I know the Boston Pride do some things with the Bruins and the Toronto Furies do some things with the Maple Leafs. But I think maybe exploring that first and women's teams being able to take advantage of some of the resources from the men's team in their same geographical area is probably a good starting point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been interesting to see some of those partnerships because it has, it's given the profile a little bit more. And I do think we talked about this on our last podcast, I believe, or it may have been Twitter, I don't even remember now, about the Sports Night in Canada showing the CWHL scores, like during mm-hmm. the broadcast, you know, kind of rolling them around. And I think, you know, you can put a Brianna Decker or a Kendall Coyne at the All-Star game. But it kind of has this circus atmosphere to it. But making it a normal part of hockey, I think, is even more valuable. And I think
just put it as a normal part of your broadcast as you're going through the scores. Just talk about those scores also. Yeah, right. I agree.
Yeah. All right, Hannah, how about you? Like, where do you fall in this conversation? Because I know we were chatting on Twitter and like I was mad. I was so, so mad about this whole thing because it seemed like every single time there was an opportunity to kind of steer the ship in the right direction, like it didn't go there. It just seemed like there were so many great opportunities for the NHL to do something, to make a statement, to kind of write the course of what they were doing and make this a great PR moment. Like, they just let it fall flat. And it was infuriating because it would have been such a great opportunity on several different fronts.
Yeah, I don't know if you ladies know this, but the NHL PR is not very good.
No.
You don't say.
Yeah, but I kind of have two lines of thinking on this one. The first is similar to Meg. If the team partners with another NHL team, you've got more resources. When I look at the Buttes, they practice at the same rink as the Sabres. They have the same resources as the Sabres, but there's a big asterisk next to that. Because many of them work full-time jobs, don't live in Buffalo, and drive in from wherever they live for practices after their day job or on the weekend. So these women don't have the opportunity to actually be full-time professional athletes. So we really can't even see like the full potential of these non-male hockey players because they aren't given the resources to reach their full potential unless they're on the national team and they get paid to actually play.
And I think that's another, sorry to jump in, but I think that's another avenue that affiliated men's teams can help out with because, again, the Toronto Furies and the CWHL aren't officially affiliated with the Maple Leafs, but they do have some kind of partnership. And part of that is that some of the Furies work for the Maple Leafs. So even exploring like that in terms of informal partnerships would be helpful because, like you said, one of the biggest things is, these teams don't provide a living wage.
Yeah, well, and you actually brought up my second line of thought on this is if the NHL were to sort of be the parent company of an, merged league, whatever you called it, there's the opportunity to have more women and more diverse voices in the room if you do that, especially if it's an affiliation with a team and not necessarily with the league as a whole. But I think there's really nothing bad that can happen from having more diverse and inclusive voices in the room, particularly in a sport that is so undiverse and inclusive as hockey. Mm-hmm. So I would be excited to see what could happen in that respect, but at the same time worried because, as we saw, even people with seemingly the best intentions can and do put their foot in their mouth around, women in sports, and they make themselves look stupid and they make the women watching feel small.
And that was one of the things we mentioned on our podcast, like when they were deciding this All-Star game thing where they're having the women demo these events, was there no woman in the room who said, oh, hey, maybe we should televise this part and like introduce these women? Like it shows that the group of people making these decisions is just not very diverse.
Yeah. Well, and what I really enjoy about the Buttes organization, and I will yell and scream about how much I love the Pegulas, specifically Kim Pegula, for hours on end. So please stop me if I go too long. But they really do treat their athletes like athletes. And yes, a lot of them still have to work other jobs because the salary cap in the NWHL is weird and dumb. And they make like $12,000 a year. But the Pagulas are very good to them. And a lot of the women on that team have the opportunity to, you know, train with the best trainers in the sport in Buffalo. And it's really great to see that. And they've done a lot of like doubleheader games where if you have a ticket to the NHL game, you can go to the Buttes game for free and the Buttes will play at the NHL arena instead of the smaller Harbor Center arena where they play most of their games. And they sell, mm-hmm. you know, thousand plus tickets for their games, which is pretty decent when the arena they play in only has room for like 19,000 people. So I don't know. I think Buffalo might also be an exception because they are such a big hockey town in general. But
yeah,
I mean, it's I would really like to see a combined league, and we can name it the International Women's Hockey League, and it cannot be affiliated with the NHL, and they will be great, and I'll run it. That's my pitch.
I would love that. There are so many sort of fiddly legal and financial issues with combining the two that, I mean, having moved to Canada, so experiencing some of the cross-border shenanigans and nonsense that happen just to move from one country to another was ridiculous and time-consuming. The idea of, you know, merging two across-the-border organizations that aren't flush with cash is just basically a non-starter, which I think is part of the like a big, big, big part of the reason that it hasn't happened already, because there's a lot of issues that are way over my head because I am not an international finance lawyer. So having the NHL involved, yes, would give you basically the resources to be able to get over those hurdles and make it happen. But at what cost is what I want to ask, because, yeah, I agree that the NHL has done a pretty crap job in terms of all inclusivity like efforts. Yeah, they have You Can Play nights and pride nights and stuff, but depending on the team, sometimes it feels like we're doing this because we have to, and they don't do a very good job of making it local oriented. And it's just, yeah, I don't necessarily feel terribly included as a woman fan of the NHL all the time. So I can't imagine what it would be like to be an athlete who is trying to, you know, devote my life to this game and then to be under the umbrella of an organization that, like the NHL, frankly, at this point.
Yeah. I think there's 100 different ways that as a female fan, you sort of are told that this is a guy's sport, you know, whether you're listening to commercials on the NHL Network, on Sirius Radio, or even listening to conversations like, well, mm-hmm. you know, all the dads out there are going to understand this conversation. And you're thinking, well, wait a second, you know, mm-hmm. there's lots of women fans who are watching this. You were speaking to a population, but you're not speaking to your entire population, and maybe like open that conversation up in a lot of different ways to make people feel more inclusive. And I get really frustrated sometimes because I just want to shout, like, well, what about me? Like, I spend a lot of money and capital investing in my fandom of this sport. And I kind of feel like it's nice that you're here, sweetie, you know, and to see the Toronto Maple Leafs, you know, hire a female scout and to hire director, you know, assistant director of hockey operations, who is a woman. I think that having that market make that move, which I said on our podcast, was pretty important because it's not a stunt. It's not a small market. It's
a venerable organization in the NHL.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you guys said, you know, having more diverse voices behind the scenes, I think will hopefully maybe if the transition ever comes.
Mm-hmm. Another piece of this, just not in terms of the two women's leagues, but just in terms of making women's hockey more of an accepted thing for people to just, you know, think about in the same breath as men's hockey, which I think is the ideal place to get to. I noticed this was like 5 years ago when I moved from the States to Canada, one thing I noticed was that commercials were much more inclusive here in Canada than they were back in the States. Every single commercial that I saw would have, you know, somebody, an interracial couple or people of color or queer people kissing. That's a more recent thing, but it's happening. And I just found that to be really kind of surprising and very, very cool. And one thing that I've noticed now that I watch so much hockey is that the commercials that have hockey related stuff in them, which this is Canada, so there's a lot of them. It doesn't matter if it's a bank commercial or a beer commercial or what. But there's a lot of commercials with like kids playing hockey on the street or in the driveway or whatever. Every single one of those commercials is a bunch of kids playing hockey, and like about half the kids are girls. Every single one, like across the board. There's one of my favorite ones where somebody knocks their ball into the garage of the next door neighbor, and the garage door falls on their car, and then they have to go get their car fixed. It's a car insurance commercial, but it's a girl who's got this amazing slap shot that accidentally dents this car. So I feel like that's a sort of from outside of the organization's thing that's really important to have the culture itself sort of permeated with that, which is why I think Sportsnet rolling the scores of CWHL games is a great thing. But where they fall down is any of the recap shows, I think that they should be talking about the CWHL scores there as well. So, you know, they're going through all the different games in the NHL. Why not throw in a couple of CWHL games and do some little recap and stuff there and not make a big deal of it? Just the same like way normal. You roll the score. Yep. Exactly. Yeah. Like this is more hockey. This is more sports. So I feel like that's another step that could be taken that would be very helpful, that wouldn't rely on the NHL in any way, shape or form.
Yeah. And I think all of it goes back to having inclusive and diverse voices in the room when those decisions are being made. Like if you have a woman, more than one woman, because I think that's important. You can't, tokenism is, have is your just token as woman. Bad. Yeah. Uh-huh. But if you have a bunch of non-male, non-white people in the room, you're going to have better, bigger ideas that will include more people and expand your game. And if we keep talking about growing the game, like you're missing half of the fan base. Half of the population is not men. And so you're missing all these people. Like even on like such a petty level, like when I walk into the Sabre store and I want to buy a shirt, it takes me so long to find a shirt that doesn't have rhinestones or pink on it because,
oh my God.
Because women,
which again is fine if you want a pink shirt, but expand your selection. Not every woman wants a pink shirt,
but I want the same exact shirt as the men's, but with room for my boobs. That's it. That's all I want.
Exactly. I find this, I'm a season ticket holder for our local Philadelphia soccer team, the Union, and they went to a new vendor this year. So every time I walked into the pro shop, they had the most awful, awful t-shirts. I ended up buying nothing. I usually buy several things there during the course of the season. And this year I had to laugh because at the end of the year, they had this giant sales rack of like this soccer mom shirt. Nobody bought the soccer mom shirt. They ended up practically giving them away. Like you clearly have no women on your team in marketing who were looking at this and saying, this is not what women want. This is not the thing they want. There was a lot of pink. There's a lot of glitter. And I agree with you. If you are into pink, you're into glitter, like have at it. I heartily approve. Mm-hmm. But let's have some things that are not.
I'm currently wearing an Edmonton Oilers sweater that has like little sparklies on, or not sweater, a t-shirt that's got sparklies on it. But I also have several that are, I am blessed because there are so much choice in women's hockey shirts. You know, ones that look just like the dudes, ones that have pink, ones that have sparkles. I could go for an entire week and a half just wearing my Oilers gear. And it is delightful. And I feel sad for every market that doesn't have this.
I think I'm mostly whining because I cannot even count how many Sabre shirts, and not even Sabre shirts, it's like just other team shirts, because I am notorious for being mad that they don't sell what I want and buying something else. And like, I walked into the Hockey Hall of Fame
you're
and
so
they didn't.
Petty. I love this. You were so petty. You're
so like, petty. I walked into the Hockey Hall of Fame store. And I wanted a Sabre shirt with Jack Eichel on it, and they didn't have it because it's in Canada and they don't like Americans. This is me being petty. Please, please do not think that I actually think this.
You're not wrong. You are not wrong.
But the only Americans that they had were the ones on Canadian teams. And at this point, I had not yet decided that I liked the Calgary Flames this season. And so I did not buy the Johnny shirt. I bought a Taylor Hall Devil shirt because I was like, well, I like Taylor Hall and I'm so mad. I'm going to buy an American team just to spite them. Like, but it was a men's shirt because the woman's shirt, they didn't have one.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I had to buy a kid's shirt.
It's bad. You know, when you go to a game and they do the halftime intermission, they had little mites out there. You always see at least one or two girls with pink helmets and ponytails mm-hmm. hanging, and they're out there and they're skating and having the time of their life. I want those girls to have a place to go. I want them to be able to grow up and have the same opportunities that the boys have and have a place to land. If you were talented, if you can play, you should be able to play, to echo a sentiment. And it's frustrating that there's roadblocks out there because the Minnesota Whitecaps are selling out. You know, they have a sold out season. There is a market there if you're in a good hockey market and you have the right infrastructure around, you're leaving money on the table. You know what I mean? You just have to do it right. And I can't even imagine, as somebody coming home from work, having dinner and doing the few things I need to do around the house before, like, you know, falling into a stupor. I can't imagine having to go to work and then go to hockey practice and play at a professional level. You know, that to me is... it's unfathomable. No, granted, I'm older than these players are, but still, that's it, that kind of distraction and not being able to focus 100% and not have, like we talked about, you know, Jack Eichel's ridiculous game day routine.
I knew that's what you were going to say.
I stand by my statement that every player has that routine and they just don't vocalize it.
They absolutely do.
I'm
but to have the luxury of that and being able to focus 100% on your performance, on your game, that's a luxury that most of the women players don't have. And I think that's huge.
Well, I think that even kind of speaks to the privilege of non-male hockey players in general, right? Like, you have to have some sort of support system, and you have to have somebody helping you pay for your gear and all of that. And so even the, you know, non-male hockey players who play at a professional level are... On some level, very privileged because they have the ability to do that. And there are plenty of people out there who I think would love to play professional hockey and would love to do that and maybe have the skill set to, but they don't have the financial wherewithal to. And so I think that like brings up a whole nother level of issue that I have with like hockey culture in general.
We have talked multiple times on this show too, just about, you know, across the board, how hockey is a very sort of classist sport in the terms that you need to have a lot of money to start playing. So even for men and young boys, if you don't live in Sherwood Park, and Sherwood Park is overall pretty snazzy place to live. You know, if you live in, I'm not going to dump on any of the other Edmonton suburbs and name one, but like if you live in some of those other places that maybe the income level is not quite as high, your chances of making the NHL or the WHL, or CWHL, it's not terribly high. So when you compound that with being, you know, a woman or non-binary person, yeah, you really, really have a struggle to get there.
Yeah. Well, hockey is just, it's such an exclusive sport because of all of that.
Yep.
And your geographic location. Like if you live in an inner city, there's not a rink for you to go play at, and you have to have a way to get there. And a lot of people who live in cities don't have cars. And how do you transport your gear? And it's all like, I can get up on a really high horse about it, so I just won't touch it.
I agree with you 100%. I get so frustrated because, you know, so many teams have this, hey, come out and we will, like, for around 8 years old, the programs that we will give you free equipment, you can be, you know, a Flyers little mite or whatever they want to call it. And they offer them skating and they offer them equipment. Well, that's great when you're 8, but when you're 10 and you've outgrown all that equipment, like there's no support for that. So you get all these kids all hyped up by offering them this free program, but then the support stop. So it's like, you know, here you could, the first one's free, you know, it's like the drug dealer on the corner with the trench coat, you know what I mean?
Oh,
like, here, have some hockey, little boy, little girl, but you know, you're on your own after this. And it's like, where's the support going forward? I mean, you can make all these initiatives to lower income people, but if you're not, you know, that it's a gesture, it's not sustainable, and it's not going forward. And I think that's really frustrating. It's disingenuous. So
yeah, well, and I know
I think it's another
in Sweden, Rasmus Dahlin was talking about how a lot of players over there rent or like recycle their gear. And so once you've outgrown it, you pass it on to someone else and they pass you their gear. And that's kind of just the system there. But here we seem to value just like owning things because we're such a material culture and we're just like, it's mine. You can't have it. And so I think it's also, if hockey is the team sport that it, you know, proclaims to be, it's like the ultimate team sport, then why aren't we trying to create and foster that teamwork on the, you know, peewee level and help kids play who should be able to play this sport? Because why are we taking things away from children?
Well, doesn't TJ Oshie talk about that? And he played in War Road for a while, and they have those rinks are just open and free, like 24 hours a day. And if you want to skate, you can skate. There's like no rink free. And they're like, this is why there's so many great players come out of this little tiny town, because whoever I forget what manufacturing family built these rinks. It's like the remit is, if you want to skate, there is a place for you to skate whenever you want to skate. And just having that freedom of having that accessibility is huge. And isn't, Eric, I'm going to ask you, Connor McDavid's mom, wasn't she like running initiative of collecting used hockey equipment to end? I think I remember listening to an interview with her or something. It was something that she was doing, recognizing the costs and the privileges like her children had.
That rings a bell. I'm not entirely sure.
I'm pretty sure she was. I think she was starting some kind of an initiative and had everybody hyped up about it last year of mm-hmm. donating, you know, gently used equipment to pass on. So, yeah.
I think there's a lot of here, at least in Edmonton, I know there's a lot of market for just like selling used equipment. So if, you know, you can go to like the local, you know, locally owned sports shop and buy used pads and, you know, used stuff for slightly cheaper, which, you know, that's better than nothing, but it's not as good as just passing it on to somebody else for sure.
I like that culture. I think we could do like a whole show on like classism in hockey.
Yep.
But
I think other countries do a good job. I think Finland also is big on the clubs provide equipment so that more kids can play hockey, but that's what you do when you're a tiny country and you want to be good at hockey. So,
yep.
And they're pretty good at hockey.
Apparently, it works.
It does work.
Right. Well, except we still need to do like these games over there so we can like, you know, grow the game. Right? We got to go to Finland because they don't know what hockey is. So
ow.
Yeah.
Ow,
my eyes. Have it figured out.
I just rolled them so hard.
I don't understand. All right. NHL, man. All right. So I want to make, I specifically and kind of, I want to talk to you because you have this stat that you've been doing on the effectiveness of pulling goalies in the chart. And it's like, it's French kiss. I have that in my notes, French kiss. It's like a beautiful, wonderful thing because it's every team does it. It doesn't always, you're like, what are the analytics behind this? And the fact that you have charted these analytics makes me so incredibly happy that this thing exists in the world. And they were talking about it on Stella and Simmer one morning, and they're like, hey, I wonder if anybody's done this. And I'm like tweeting, like, yes, somebody has done it here. Because it is an interesting thing. But, and we've talked about mentioning analytics a couple times during the course of this recording. So I'm going to give you our What the Puck segment, because I would really like you to give us analytics 101, what they are, and what their role is in hockey. So, Erica, why don't you lead us into a What the Puck?
Okay. It's time for What the Puck. Those hockey things that everyone knows, but we all had to learn sometime. So, Meg, what the puck is up with analytics?
So I think there's kind of two big tenets to understand when you're starting to look at any kind of hockey stat that goes a little deeper beyond just, you know, who scored these goals and who got these points. And first of all, is just the important consideration that when you are looking at statistics, in order to make predictions or even just make observations, you need a big sample size. And goals, while goals are very important, obviously, in an individual game, it's a relatively rare occurrence, which is why a lot of times when you look at deeper hockey stats, they either expand to shots, which, you know, include all of the shots that include goals as well as the shots that the goaltender saved. And they also expand to shot attempts, which can either, depending on what specific stat you're looking at, will include times that skaters shot and missed the net, or times that skaters shot and it was blocked by the other team. Mm. So just expanding beyond goals is really important, because that forms the foundation of, I guess, one of the first deep hockey stats that people get accustomed to is Corsi, which is just a synonym for shot attempts, and is what we use as a proxy for possession. Because, of course, we don't actually know how often each team has the puck in a given game. Of course, you're hoping that with this new fabled mysterious player tracking data that's coming in the future, that who knows how much the public will have access to. That's something that could be improved. But basically, people had to start looking at shot attempts as a general proxy for who has possession of the puck. Because if, for example, one team took 60% of the shot attempts during a game, we can theorize that they had the puck for roughly 60% of the time. And that kind of leads into the second thing, which is, I mean, hockey's a weird sport, right? There's lots of bounces. We talk about puck luck all the time. And some of the general stats that people use to describe performance, like plus minus is a really good example, is not actually a good stat because it doesn't isolate that specific player's contribution. Because if you just think about plus minus, like, oh, this player was on the ice while two goals were scored, so he's a minus two. But there is no way to prove, at least with that stat, that that player was actually responsible for those two goals. I mean, maybe he was playing in front of a terrible goaltender and he gave up two really easy shots. And in that case, those aren't the player's fault. And it's impossible to tease that out from such a small statistic. And so that's when you kind of need to get broader. Because if you go back to the example, people have proven that if, for example, a team controls 60% of the shot attempts during a game, that that is a good team. If they can consistently keep positive possession numbers, those numbers are highly correlated with goal differential and success, which is the things that you want, right? But in an individual game, sometimes that just doesn't happen, right? I mean, we've all watched those games where the worst team won, right?
Mm-hmm. And many.
So many. I mean, it just happens because that's how hockey is. And so just being able to take that into account is really important because, again, those players might have played really well, but one lucky bounce goes the wrong way and you lose the game. And so it's not fair to say that that was a bad game and everyone performed poorly. So it's really just an exercise in expanding your sample size, so to speak, in the biggest of nutshells.
Okay. And the whole point in this is trying to make predictions for what. So I guess so this is something like I constantly am trying to wrap my head around analytics, because when I first started really paying attention to hockey in a hard way, it seemed like there was this battle going on. And it seems like analytics have kind of won. But in the beginning, it was like the eye test versus the analytics, and coaches who say, well, I know what I know. I don't need numbers to show me what you're telling me. But people are saying, but no, look at the numbers. And the numbers might say something slightly different. So the whole point of having this data is to, A, sort of predict what's going to happen, how you can tweak what you have to make those things happen, and to possibly look at your assets to determine what you might need to make your team better. Am I correct?
Yeah, and just having more ways to value your players in a quantitative way. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, you know, if on an individual, and if you look at it at a broader team level, you're able to assemble players that have different values in different areas, right? And hopefully form a cohesive team. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I guess a good example of, because it's, I mean, hockey analytics is still in its infancy, especially if you compare it to like baseball analytics, right? And so there's still people that are developing new ways to look at the game all the time. And the same is true within teams. I mean, teams have brilliant people working for them who are developing these insights that are just private, you know, that we don't know about. And there's companies too that do more of this tracking data for teams. But an example, it was only like a handful of years ago that people started tracking just on their own how a puck entered the zone. Like entered the zone if you either dumped it in or you carried it in. And they were able to prove that if you carry the puck into the zone, like with possession, then you generate like twice as much offense. And that was a really important thing that people might have known via the eye test, but now it's something that they were able to prove.
So do you think having access to these analytics has changed the game at all?
I think it has, yeah. And I think it depends on the teams. Like, I don't think there's any team out there that doesn't use analytics in some way. But there's definitely varying levels, probably. And I do think it's changing. And I think it's changing how the game is played.
I on this podcast previously have somewhat given the side eye to analytics, not because I think it's bunk. I love the idea of analytics, but as you just said, Meg, it is, you know, kind of in its infancy for hockey. So
it's definitely not all encompassing. Like, they have found things, you know, that they have proven, and there's still a lot of things. Like, goalies are still really a big voodoo in a lot of people's minds. Like, people have made some really great progress in trying to quantify and predict goaltender performance, but that's a thing that's still definitely in its infancy. And I do think player tracking is coming next year. We know that. We do not know how much data the public is going to get, because all the data the public has now, I guess a lot of people don't know this, is the NHL has these play-by-play files that people can scrape from the internet. And it basically just gives you every event and who was on the ice at time that event happened. So, again, depends on what access people get data to. But, like, we have no data on passing, right? Because that's not, like, an event that registers. Mm-hmm. It's not a shot or a shot attempt. So if there was more data on stuff like that, like, there's been these isolated tracking projects where people just watch the games and track their own data. About how, you know, more cross-ice passes lead to more offense, et cetera. Like, there's been a lot of those individual levels, but having access to more data will only, you know, lead to more insights in the future. But it's definitely not, there's people who get too tied to the numbers, because you do have to combine it, I think, with a good eye test.
Yeah. I have a question, because I know you also follow baseball. I don't know if you follow baseball analytics as much as you do hockey analytics, but was it easier for baseball to develop the analytics, the set of analytics that they have, because the events in baseball are somewhat more discrete than in hockey, which is just a constantly flowing, constantly moving sport? Or am I oversimplifying things?
No, that's absolutely true. Yeah, because each baseball event starts with a pitch, right? The pitcher throws a pitch and then something happens. And so, yeah, that makes it a lot easier to quantify what's happening. And especially now with the fact that we don't have player tracking data, it makes it especially difficult to judge defensive impacts. Because for defense, you're just hoping that something doesn't occur, right? Like, that's ideal. Yeah. And so it's hard to track that, okay, he didn't get a shot, like, that's good. But there's just a lot of limitations, especially around, you know, quantifying defensive play. So there's
probably
a lot
that
can come from players.
Because there's so much chemistry involved in hockey that, you know, you probably get in some other sports like basketball and stuff, but certainly not in baseball. You have to have some amount of being on the same page when, you know, you're trying to make a double play or whatever. But in hockey, every single thing, unless you're a goalie, depends on the people around you and how well you work with them. And I despair of ever getting to the point where that is something that can be, honestly, if that was something that you could track by analytics, I think it might scare me a little bit.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, there's always going to be things that you can't track. And that's part of what makes it interesting, because you can't, like you say, you don't play games on the computer. I mean, we can simulate them thousands of times and try to make a good guess, but wild bounces are going to happen. Weird things are going to happen. And that's, like, why people watch. So,
yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true.
And the fun part about analytics, at least for where we are right now, is watching them kind of develop in front of you. So 5 years ago, there wasn't, you know, a goals above replacement. And now we've got a couple people trying to come up with different ways to judge goals above replacement for a player. But on top of that, Meg and I often joke that we would make a really good scout if you combined us, because she understands the numbers and I understand, like, the visual eye test a little bit better. But as Meg said, it's so important to have both of those things. Like, you can't just use the eye test because you're missing some of the underlying stuff, but you can't just use the data because you're missing things like passing and skating and all of that kind of stuff. So it's that, and it's having the right people to analyze your stuff. So if you have the wrong people trying to do your analytics in your analytic department, it's just as bad as not having somebody.
Interesting. Yeah. Now, how do you see player tracking affecting the analytics world?
I have so much fear for goalies and us knowing how fast shots are going at them now. Like, when you look at pitching and someone gets hit by, like, a 99-mile-an-hour pitch, you're terrified for that person because that has to hurt. So watching a goalie get pelted with shots that can range between, I don't know, 50 miles an hour and 100, that's going to be kind of scary. I wouldn't want to be a goalie mom.
Yeah, it really depends on what data they end up releasing to the public, I think. Because when they talk about player tracking, at least on the league public level, they talk about things that like the average TV viewer would be interested in, like how fast the shot was and how fast this person is skating and how many miles they skated during the game or something. When people who are interested in analytics want actually like to see a lot more data. So we don't know what we're going to get because the teams certainly have internal tracking either that they do on their own for specific purposes or companies that they hire to do that tracking for them. So It just depends on what we're going to have available, but it's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, I speculated when this all first came out, it's like how this could be used during, say, contract negotiation, because like you said, I mean, they may have internal tracking or they may have outside companies do this, but all of a sudden there's going to be, you know, real data, whether it's in a puck or a stick or something, like, and how could that be a good thing or could it be a bad thing? And is this something that 5 years from now, the NWHPA is going to come back and say, yeah, you know, something like this data can't be used during a contract negotiation or something?
I think they already have. I think that was part of the news that came out once they, because we all knew that they've been working on player tracking and they've tested it in a bunch of games, but they were testing it publicly, you know, during the All-Star game. And it is going to be, the players are going to be wearing the tracking chips next year. And But I think the NHLPA did say something about it, and there's going to be some restrictions on how that data is able to be used during negotiations and like during arbitration and such.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, certainly you can say, you know, we're not going to, we're not going to use this.
That's right.
But so that, which means you can't say it out loud to factor it in.
But I've got binder right here that's
everybody's
telling
gonna
me.
Everybody's going to know it. Yeah. So, I mean, honestly, in terms of like whether it's going to affect players positively or negatively, I think it's going to affect the good players positively and the less good players negatively. And frankly, I'm okay with that.
Probably hear a lot more like character stuff. He's a character guy. You know, his analytics may not show up. He's good in the room.
But there's a way to be a good character guy, but also a good player. And I think we often separate them. We're like, he's a character guy, which is an excuse for terrible play. But you can be a character guy who also puts up decent points and, you know, contributes on the PK and like does some good stuff. It's just teams need to realize that you can be both, and you should be both.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I think with the, you know, with roster constrictions and the cap constrictions, there's less room now for players that don't contribute to the overall goal in some way. So,
yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'm really looking forward to it because I love numbers. Like, numbers make me so happy, and just being able to trying to master something that's big and messy. And I think when we try to quantify it, it just like it's neat and tidy and orderly in ways that makes my brain happy. So I like having that much data. It's also fascinating to me, even with having all of that data. And again, I'm looking at you, Flyers, that doesn't necessarily translate to success. So even as much as we'd like to quantify this and say, okay, we can have these figures and we know these things, there's still people involved. And so it's always going to be an element of the unknown. So I do think that there's place for, I think old time coaches are right. There is still an eye test involved. I think there's variables that cannot be quantified. They're always going to go into making a successful hockey team. And that makes me incredibly happy because if it were too predictable, it would just be like playing a computer simulation.
Yeah. And so, I mean, even in baseball, you know, baseball analytics is quite advanced, like both publicly and privately within the teams. But, you know, the games are still exciting. We still don't know who's going to win. So It definitely has not ruined the game, as some people kind of often catastrophize that it will. But they're
sucking
wrong.
The fun right out of it. Yeah. That's what I've heard.
We'll just start playing the games on our computers. So
we don't need the stinking players. No. We'll just do it all ourselves. All right, guys, thank you so much, because I have been wanting to talk about analytics and that is still above my pay grade. I'm still working on it.
Oh, and mine.
Do you have any resources that you can recommend to somebody who is interested in learning more about analytics and perhaps tracking some of their own stats?
I sure do. You should follow Meg on Twitter because she's super smart and will explain things to you in a way that's understandable. But not that wasn't a joke, but in like another
I more agree 100%.
serious. Yeah. Sean Tierney on Twitter, who is charting hockey, takes a lot of this, you know, all the numbers and puts them into charts so you can kind of visualize what you're looking at when someone says that the Corsi is this, or people take this many shot attempts, or this goalie had is good at saving from this spot. So I highly recommend checking his stuff out.
And a lot of, and a lot of, it depends on the city, but a lot of the athletic writers are tend to be kind of a little more analytically minded. And same with a lot of the, you know, each team has an SB Nation fan blog, and a lot of those blogs are actually really analytically heavy as well.
And I will say,
I know our Flyers, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yes, Broad Street Hockey is a great example. Yeah.
Well, in both The Athletic and the SB Nation, writers tend to do a very good job of explaining what they're talking about, whereas sometimes when you just follow the people who create these charts or document all of this stuff, they don't explain what they're talking about sometimes. They just expect people to know it and understand it, which maybe other people do, and I'm just dumb. But like, no. it's nice when you're reading The Athletic, and you know, Ryan Simpson from the Sabres Athletic page does a really good job of explaining what he's talking about, showing you a chart of it, and then detailing what could be better.
Yeah, I know if you're a Philadelphia Flyers fan and you've read anything by Charlie O'Connor on The Athletic, like he is a great one. So he'll even, you know, he'll do his little recap of what he's talking about. And then there's a little pause that says the rest of this article is going to be referencing advanced analytics. Click through here and I'll explain what this is. And I think that's great. But there still is. There is a learning curve. So if you're interested in this and it seems very bewildering, don't despair. There's lots of, you know, shorthand. There's lots of abbreviations. There's a lot of acronyms, you know, just. I keep note cards. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I have note cards. I have spreadsheets. You know, like I take notes about things. And it's just becoming familiar with that. So, yeah, there are some resources out there. Maybe we'll put some of them in our show notes for people if they are interested in learning a little bit more about this. So, thank you guys. I've been wanting to have Meg on to talk about this ever since I started following you guys on Twitter, because you do a lot of really interesting things and it's just fun. It's a fun mental exercise to look at this and see if you can discern patterns and ways of predicting what seems like an unpredictable event. So it's very cool. All right. So as we close out every one of our Beginner Puck episodes with a hockey tidbit, Hannah, Meg, we're going to let you guys close out with a hockey tidbit, some little small hockey thing that just absolutely delights you. So Hannah, why don't you go first?
So I would like to first say that I texted Meg to make sure we didn't have the same tidbit, and we had very similar ones, so I picked a second. So mine is
on
the
brand.
We have the same brain, it's fine. But mine is the post-game goalie hug. When you win and the team lines up to hug and bump helmets with the goalie, I love nothing more than seeing that. I watch the end of games because I like to see who wins, but also because I love seeing like the different handshakes, the way people jump on their goalie, especially if it's a newer goalie who is like getting their first win or an older goalie who's making a comeback. It's just delightful. And I get very upset when it doesn't happen because the goalie has either skated off the ice due to injury or they lose.
Or sometimes the TV feed just cuts out.
That's it.
And I'm like, we want to watch this.
Yes, that's one thing I was going to say. Sometimes we are able to have like both the US and the Canadian feeds on because we have two televisions in our living room and we're hockey nerds. I find that consistently if one side cuts away from the post-game celebration, it's always the US broadcast, and the Canadian broadcast invariably will stick around and let you see that the hockey celebration.
Americans failing us again.
I'm very lucky to have at least in the Sabres, you know, realm, there's a couple people who must get both streams, because if I don't see it on the US side, I will see a GIF of it later, and it just brings me joy. It's so familial, and it makes me really like have affection for these dumb idiots who play this sport.
So true. I can't agree more. I think this might have been one of my hockey tidbits like way back in the beginning, because it was one of my very, very favorite things about hockey, because like you said, the emotion is real, and like they recognize that this man has done an amazing thing. He is like their protector, and he protected the goal, and they just are showing their appreciation. And again,
and it's just funny to me that they all literally like have to touch helmets. Like that's an important part of the ritual. It's not just a hug. Like you must bump heads.
I think my favorite is this year the Sabres have this very large child named Tage Thompson who is like 6'6", and Carter Hutton is I think 5'11", and so for him to bump helmets, he has to like physically bend over, and it is so adorable. I love it. Like, so I love the celebration aspect of hockey too, because in basketball, you don't like jump for joy when you score because it happens so frequently. And so I think that like the goalie hug is just like this end of game celebration, which is, it's just great. And I love it.
And you have some players like, Konechny will do like the full body hug. You know what I mean? Like it's a tap. It's like no, the this tackle is a full, hug. Yeah. Oh, well, love it.
Matthew Tkachuk gets full on picked up by the goalie after the games, like a hug pickup. And it's just like these little moments where you're like, oh, they really do love each other. And they are like this little family on the ice.
You know, for a sport that is so filled with like toxic masculinity in one ways, it is like the softest.
They're very affectionate.
Just affectionate, it's warm, emotionally open sport in so many other ways. See, it's like weird.
I feel like maybe, and this is just me totally postulating, but the fact that there is so much toxic masculinity and there's, you know, literal fist fighting and blood on the ice means that they have upped that side of it enough that they feel comfortable enough in their masculinity that they are able to express their genuine soft affections at the end of the game because they have already proven that they're men.
Yeah, that's like, I made this guy bleed, so no homo when I hug you, bro.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh. All right, so Meg, what is your hockey tidbit that you and Hannah had very similar?
So we all know that Twitter is mostly a hellscape for a lot of different reasons, but the tiny nice corner of hockey Twitter is a great joy in my life. And I personally am, you know, a little more affiliated with like the heavy stats side of hockey Twitter. But I mean, I would not have gotten as into hockey or as into hockey stats specifically if it weren't for so many nice people on Twitter who would either explain things or just talk about what they were doing in interesting ways. And it's just a very nice, we're sequestered. It's small, but it's a very nice little small community.
I love that. I will frequently, because I camp out on the Beginner's Puck Twitter account a lot, and it's sort of my safe space. Like when my regular Twitter is just filled with like lots of terrible things that are happening in the real life world.
Yep.
I'd like go over and hang out at Beginner's Puck for a little while, and it just like I love everybody in that bar because it's just everybody loves hockey and it's wonderful and it feels really good and pure and sweet, and I love hanging out there when it's a bad day because
because most of the
Twitter
days
feed.
Are bad days.
My regular Twitter feed can be a trash fire.
Oh, yeah.
See, I haven't looked at my regular Twitter feed in 6 years, I think, because a long time ago, I determined I needed to break it up into lists. So I have used Twitter with you know, lists of sort of like the different passions that I follow. And there's definitely some overlap. But I have my hockey list, which is, you know, actually pretty small because sometimes I'll follow somebody for a while and be like, oh, no. So I don't camp out on the Beginner's Puck account as much because right within my app I have a list of hockey people with like all of you people and, you know, a few others, and I will often try to follow like players you know that I like, and then I'll be like, oh, I really don't want to know.
Oh, I don't think I follow, I can't think of any. I'm sure I follow a couple, but oh no, I do not know.
No,
I mean, they're either like terrible or just super boring.
So boring.
They're all boring on Twitter. I'm sure that they have like Easter egg Twitters that they have where they tweet stupid stuff. But Meg and I are big advocates for never going into your faves likes. Just don't do that because it will ruin them for you.
Yeah. You got to keep like a safe distance. Yeah.
There's a I do have like I follow an inordinate amount of people on Instagram only because it
That's a little different.
Well, yeah. And it's mostly, you know, here, I'm practicing here, I'm going here. And like, it was funny, like last summer, every single hockey player that I follow on Instagram went to see Coldplay. It must have been a rule that they all had to go see Coldplay. So I had lots and lots of footage from Coldplay concerts.
Yeah, I'll follow on Instagram for like the dog, all the dog content.
Yes.
We're here for the dogs. Yeah, on Twitter,
so many good hockey dogs. But no, Twitter, far, far away from Twitter. Like, I follow the teams, and I follow, like, some broadcasters and things. But, yeah, no, I don't want to know. I don't want to see you in your MAGA hat. Like, I don't even want to know that about you. Mm-mm. So, all right, guys, this has been a ton of fun. I'm so thrilled that we had you guys on, mostly because it was fun talking hockey with you, and I need to have more women in my life to do that with. So, hooray. Thanks. And you have been listening to Beginner's Puck. And remember, hockey is for everyone, especially for you.
Beginner's Puck is a Castria production for the Incomparable Network. Our catchy theme tune is Ephemeral by Sunspot. Have a hockey question you'd like us to discuss on an upcoming episode? Reach out to us on Twitter at Beginner's Puck, or email us at beginnerspuck@gmail.com. And you can find all of our great show notes at theincomparable.com/puck.